to CMU Booked, Carnegie Mellon's official literary podcast. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Sam.
And here we are. We are in a brand new recording studio.
Woo!
Super excited. And what are we reading this week, Sam?
So this week we read Hombrecito by Santiago Sanchez, which came out in 2024 and was written by a professor here at CMU. So we're super excited.
Enjoy, team.
It's been a good week in cultural consumption.
I have started reading Helter Skelter.
Right.
So it's here. I have it right here. It's the number one true crime bestseller of all time. But it's this true story of the Manson murders. And I'm just really obsessed with.
Right. You said it was a little technical. Is that how you described it?
Oh, yeah. It's very much like the mechanics and the lawsuit, everything. It's all of the details and such crazy, like, sequential stuff. It's really cool. Love it. How about you?
So I have been on, like, a music kick this week. Like, oh my gosh, I'm just really feeling music lately. Anyone else out there? Like, raise your hand.
I've listened to music before.
Have you?
Yeah, so I can really connect. I think I can connect with what you're about to talk to me about.
So I went to a Marina concert on Monday. Shout out my Marina heads. It was so, so good. She was incredible. I was super close. And I love Marina. And then I'm also going to a Lorde concert tonight.
Last night, I mean, new Taylor album dropped.
Guys.
Favorite song?
Right now, The Fate of Ophelia. Or Opalike.
My favorite is Wishlist. I think that this is closer to like Midnight's vibes, which I enjoy. I think it's even better. I'm pleasantly surprised. I think it's very run-of-the-mill pop music, but I'm not complaining. This book was also so great to be reading with, you know, all of the new music. Also, very nice reprieve from Helter Skelter, which is about a bunch of killer hippies. So it was really nice to have something a little bit more emotionally intact.
Definitely a different vibe.
Yeah. a little bit more pleasant.
I agree.
For sure. This isn't something that I would go out of my way to pick up. It's not my taste. But I love that this podcast, you know, opens those doors for me. And I really enjoyed reading this sort of first-generation narrative from, you know, this queer perspective. I haven't read anything like that, I don't think. I thought that the prose was really interesting and new and fresh. And so those were my initial thoughts. Definitely when I first read like the first chapter. How about you?
I knew that I was going to connect with it very early on, I think, especially as a lesbian. I enjoyed a lot of like the queer aspect of it, but also I like a story like this. I'm jumping straight to the end of it, but the structure of the story kind of reminds me of like some of the other books we've read, like Pachinko or even like Sharon Dilworth's story To Be Marquette. A lot of it's trying to be very realistic about like everyday life. And because I think that Hombrecito is telling such a big story, but trying to really go into brass tacks. But I know you talked a little bit about not loving that structure.
I think I disliked the structure of the story. It didn't really make sense to me. I thought especially the changes in first person to third person. We get first person narrator and then it goes to an omnipotent narrator by the end when we're getting more into the mother, which I found to be confusing as a reader. I found it to be a little confusing and I didn't really understand it. But just as like a brief overview, so this sort of follows the main character. We don't really know what his name is until probably a third of the way into the novel, referred to as the boy, Santiago, who moves from Colombia with his half-brother and mother, Manuel and Luz, and they move to Florida. And it's basically about, yes, shout out Florida. And essentially, it's just about his journey trying to adapt into American life, also sort of confronting masculinity and femininity, and how it's like he has those notions of gender identity, and then he then has to confront those in America too, around these people who aren't from there. They're all immigrants. Discovering his sexuality, acting on it, going to college, and then sort of the aftermath, being an artist, a struggling artist, and traveling back home and seeing his family. And so that's sort of like a brief overview.
So doing a little bit of research on Santiago Sanchez, there was an interview that they did. I can't remember who with, but they had mentioned that the first part of this book was kind of a standalone thing that I believe was published before the rest of the book was like even written. And I didn't think that the boy was a character in the first, like in my opinion, in the first third of the book.
No, I definitely thought that there was going to be a more, I guess, a healthier balance between, right, the boy, Manuel, and Luz. I thought that it would be more balanced between the three of them with how the first, like, third of the book is set up, where, right, he seems sort of on the outs of these more fully formed people. And so we're getting their perspectives and then barely a perspective from him, sort of just reading it. Which is why then when it segues to him spending time with other families, sort of longing for his peers' relationships, I think when he goes on that camping trip with Matthew.
Yes.
Matthew, and then Jack is his father. We sort of, I feel like that's the transition where we start to get way more insularly focused on the boy rather than the family unit, which is a definite change. It was a shift. And I didn't understand that shift when I initially read the book.
I agree. In one of my film classes, Jeff, our professor Jeff, had us create a film pitch for a biopic of a famous person. And a lot of people would stand up and give these pitches that kind of were just like highlights of like a life. Like it's kind of all in like flashbacks. And that's kind of what this book felt like to me, where it's little flashes of life at different aspects, but not like a huge through line. Because for this specific assignment, like in class, like we were like, how do you make a biopic about somebody? What do you zoom in on? But there wasn't a ton of zoom in this book.
It got to a certain point in the novel where his first boyfriend, Leo, who he meets online in these chat rooms, Leo sort of goes off the rails when Santiago, the main character, goes to Yale. I did not understand how much this first boyfriend was going to be a constant in the novel. It really threw me off. I did like it. It gave you a good idea of Santiago. I feel like the relationship with Leo gave me more of an idea of the type of person the narrator was, because Leo really read to me as this sort of reliant individual. Mm-hmm. The I pull away and so you pull closer to me, and once you pull closer to me, then I'll pull closer to you, and then once I do that, you'll pull farther away. It's just this like toxic cycle. I feel like it's pretty clear the second they're like, oh, the first time you cheated on me, you did this. And the first time I cheated on you, I did this. And getting an idea of like, that's something that the boy growing up, you know, from being so lonely to them being complacent in this very dysfunctional, at least from my perspective, relationship, and saying that this is liberating to me because I've felt so lonely and, you know, repressed for the rest of my life. It's like this relationship is an act of rebellion, but also of agency. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What did you make of Leo and their relationship? Because I really think that that's probably the most important and the most interesting part of the novel, at least to me.
I agree. Well, I do think that Leo had like significantly more agency and interesting and complex reactions to his surroundings that at some points I was like, kind of wish Leo was the main character, or at least like a spinoff. You see Leo in these flashes kind of at his worst a lot. And I'm curious, I want to see him at his best. I don't know if is his best moments of happiness where he's with Santiago. You feel for Leo more than you feel for Santiago, because Santiago's Achilles heel is that he's an acts of service type of person. He just wants people to like him, which is super relatable for a lot of people. But I think it's a lot more interesting to hear from somebody who's so destructive in their love.
Yeah, Leo. I just feel like when you're reading it, you're like, I know this person. You're so enigmatic. There's no way not to love you. Yeah. And now I have to not love you because it hurts me so much.
Yeah.
Like Santiago feels, where it's like, I love you so much, but this is so destructive to me and my development. And I feel like a big turning point in the novel is when Leo starts doing meth.
Right.
And Santiago does meth with him and then is like, I can't do this anymore.
But also, I was mad at Santiago in this point. He's like, let's do meth this one time. And then is like, well, how dare you for doing meth? And you're in a very similar situation as Leo, but you don't want to accept that.
Santiago is starting to realize that what you're saying, like the Achilles heel of him relying on acts of service to bring him happiness and thinking that that's a way to find love. I feel like this is a moment in which he's like, I can't do that anymore. That's a one-way ticket to being a meth head. You know what I'm saying? And I think he's starting to realize like, oh, wait, it's an illusion that this is liberating.
Yeah.
Like maybe one time it was, and that rebellious spirit is wonderful when you're a kid. There's an adventurous world waiting for you. I feel like the reckless decisions that he makes online, meeting up with Leo at a mall and then like hooking up in like a breast pumping room, that adventure you see sort of crumble away. And where Santiago has this sort of reckoning with himself, I think Leo can't handle that. I don't think Leo wants to, you know, confront reality and be like, I'm unhappy and the world is mean to me. And so I need to become this sort of person to deal with it. He just won't. Stubborn. And so I think that's what drugs and sex and all of that give him. It makes him feel light and not tied down to things.
Santiago's also, I don't know, what does he call it over like Grindr? He's having sex with people for money.
I think he says it's hooking.
Hooking. He's also doing a lot of these similar self-destructive behaviors, but feels so disconnected from Leo. He somehow gets to go home to like a family and a mom that loves him and everything. And is that the defining factor that makes him different and more like savable than Leo?
I feel Santiago is more in touch with his feelings. And I feel like maybe that's a cop-out answer, but there's something to be said that like the author is within the narrator. Introspective people are going to be introspective, and Leo isn't an introspective person. And so I don't know if he's savable or not savable. I don't think that the book argues one way or another, because it hinges so much on the individual. I don't feel like you can predict anything any of the characters do in this novel. I couldn't predict anything. I didn't think Manuel was going to get married and have a kid. I thought that he was going to be a burnout and not go to college and disappoint Luz.
Me too.
Yeah, and not become a, whatever, radiologist or whatever his father who abandoned them was. Do you think Leo is not savable?
Well, we have that scene with Nasir. Nasir, one of Leo's boyfriends whom he cheats on relentlessly. Nasir and Santiago are driving in a car looking for Leo, and Nasir is like, we have to do this. We have to do this for Leo. Santiago's trying to explain, this is just going to kind of happen like over and over again. Like, you can only do this so much. Leo wants this. He thrives on this. He thrives on people worrying about him. And I know that you are going to get sucked down with them. Is hooking. How can Santiago reckon with this?
I think it's an obstacle in the same way that him working at the restaurant is an obstacle, where he doesn't really understand how to feel not lonely anymore. Like, the financial aspect is a part of it, but then there's a certain point where he says, I'm just doing this for fun. You know, like, I go out with these different guys, I break up with these two boyfriends this weekend. I think it's a way to combat loneliness. How do you think that influences his going to Colombia, his hooking up with the bellboy when he goes to Colombia?
Which was crazy, by the way.
That was a gag.
I was gagged. Referring to Santiago at the beginning as like the boy who's on the outside, I think was done very well. The transition from perspective made a little bit more sense to me, especially because the character is physically like growing up as this perspective changes. Everything is temporary. Looking for these little joys of like, I made this money from hooking. That's a temporary happiness, not happiness, but it's a surge of something for Santiago in the moment. He does these drugs, tries meth once. He's willing to kind of try anything once just to see if it works out for him.
There's an impulsivity there, definitely. And I think that's probably a big through line in which, right, like the recklessness and the seeking of satisfaction. And I think that talking about constants versus fleeting moments, the mom is a really central aspect of that. I really liked the sort of continuing moment of him wanting to sleep with her, because I also was like, yes, there's something really special about that sometimes, to just share space with a person like that. I liked especially establishing that at the beginning of the story with super important and notorious American motifs. Boy Scouts.
Ooh.
I was like, what a great way to kick this off, because I immediately got an image of Norman Rockwell, Americana, like, you know, 1958, let's put on our bags and let's traverse off into the woods and create a new life for ourselves and pick ourselves up by the bootstraps with an immigrant narrative. Give it to me. I just thought it was really interesting. And the way that you, I don't like the boy. I didn't understand using that.
Right.
I thought having it start in a setting like a Boy Scouts camp and then having it move into the wilderness and him going on the camping trip with Matthew and Jack, it's like we see him confronting these sorts of American motifs in this culture that people seek out and him being on the outside there because you feel it there. Mm-hmm. I don't need someone to spell it out for me. I can get it from, I got the sense that he was an outsider immediately. The other Boy Scouts don't even let him sit with them. He sits in between them, Daniel and the other one.
Yeah. they call him the wrong name. They call him San Diego. And they think that's hysterical.
It's done so well in, you know, having these two cultures sort of clash. So I didn't feel like calling him the boy and then having him transition to being called Santiago was super necessary. I just thought it was a little gimmicky. But that's also me.
On the topic of, like, this convergence of culture, it takes place in Miami. When they move to the U.S., they go to Miami. And talking about the different ways that this author tells the story, on chapter 11, we get the entirety of college for this character flies by in one sentence. And this is the entire chapter, page 159 on the paperback. It says, "I made it through college without killing myself." Period. And that's the entire chapter.
I mean, how would you describe college?
Yeah.
Seriously.
What else is there to say?
John Mulaney has a really funny quote of, college was just a four-year game show of, do my friends hate me or do I just need to go to sleep? And it's like, that's what that is.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, like, college is hard. We see the way that college has changed him in the after. And so I thought it was sort of funny, but I do understand, like, we're getting right, like, flashpoints. As you were talking about.
Right.
Do you think that that was a flashpoint that should have been included in the biopic?
Well, I would have liked it a little bit more if we just skipped from before college and then we went after I'm graduated. And you're like, oh, wow, time has passed.
Yeah.
I personally didn't love the execution.
I just also wanted to talk about male expressions of love and sort of what is acceptable and what isn't acceptable. The relationships between Santiago and his father and then how those are mirrored with his own lovers and the men who he relies on was really interesting. But I also thought cross-culturally, the way that his Colombian culture sort of deals with male expressions of love, desire, friendship, whatever, versus Americans, but also how they're very alike.
The men will call each other by names that are gendered female, like princesa. The culture they're coming from is so gendered that they are forced to choose whether they're going to identify each other as, like, these feminine nicknames or these male nicknames. Near the end, when the mom is giving away a lot of her furniture.
Out of the closet. Movers.
Yeah, something. Yeah. She's donating to them.
And she just expects them all to be gay.
Yeah. She expects them all to be gay and to be like, this is so great! Like,
she's like, so mom. Cute. That's so mom.
It's cute and it's sweet. The way that she's separating, you know, the idea of manliness in a way that reflects her own culture.
It's just her trying to reconnect with this part of her life and her family and herself that she feels so disconnected from by giving away all of this Sharon stuff, the woman who she worked for, who, you know, helped send them to college and other things. I think her letting go of all of those things and trying to, right, use this, like, gay charity organization. She's trying to reconnect with her sons in a way that she is in this final chapter sort of being like, I failed in this way. I've done this wrong, right? Like, when Santiago sort of, when she asks him if he likes boys or girls, and he just cried and didn't say anything, and then she didn't say anything, and she's like, I don't know why I didn't go over and hug him, realizing how alone she is. You know, she wants the movers to come inside, she wants to talk to them, she wants them to sit down, she wants to talk about her boys, and she realizes that that's not where we're at right now in her life. That's not where she's at. And also that sort of camaraderie and with the young men that she knew and loved. And she doesn't have anymore, you know, and she doesn't have a second chance either.
Right.
Manuel resents her and resents him. The older brother resents Santiago and her and doesn't go and visit. And she's alone. Her husband has died. And I think it's just a lonely way to end off the book. I also think it forgives her, though.
I agree, especially near the end. Once we get the perspective of her from Santiago as an adult, they're a lot more careful with her and, like, kind. I think what we realize near the end of the book is that the mother, Luz, has lived her entire life as a woman and kind of, like, knows how men are. That's where we get her perspective on men when she's talking about her past boyfriends and her husbands. And she even says, like, to her son, she says, out of both of your fathers, I would choose Mark, her dead husband. And she's lived a lot of lives. Great line.
I loved that line.
I really loved that line.
That was a great line.
But I think that that's just trying to show she knows what type of people men can be. And we don't get a lot of the feminine perspective in this book, but that's why I really appreciated Luz. And so I liked at the end when she's trying to reckon with her two very different sons through this, what she sees as a very big act of commitment to Santiago. I think that's why she has such complicated feelings about the movers.
I think a lot of the characters in this novel are really trying to understand one another, and in trying to understand one another, hurt themselves in the way that these people hurt themselves. She is isolating herself to the greatest degree to try and feel closer to Santiago. And I think the same thing happens with Santiago and Leo. There's a really another great quote that I really wanted to bring up. This is 203 on the paperback. It says, this is when Leo is doing meth and Santiago joins him. He says, but in his room tonight, I asked Leo to light the pipe for me. I promised myself I would only do it this one time to know what it was like. Maybe I would understand what was taking him away from me. Just like abuse, addiction, anything like that, or just heartbreak. It's like you want to feel what the other person is feeling if you love them enough. Because you're like, I don't want you to be alone. But if it's going to hurt you in the end, I think Santiago throughout the novel understands that he can't do that anymore. But it's so human. It's such a human part of the novel. And I really enjoyed that. And I also liked how that humanity is integrated into sort of this primality. I picked up a lot on like integrations about the five senses, a lot of about smelling and sort of like these animalistic, very male-centered. Yeah. Like we just read Bunny. And all of the female physicality is very prevalent. Smells, tastes, you know, touch. You know, they want to eat each other. Like the boys, the darlings, the boys that are bunnies literally try and eat them. And I feel like there were so many moments in this novel where I felt them. Like you talk about like sweat. Everything is just so tangible when they're hooking up in the breast pumping room,
right,
when he's living in his apartment with the two roommates.
For context, I was reading Hannah's copy of this book after she scribbled in it. I'm seeing her circle like touch, feel, smells near the end when Santiago is speaking with his father after the last day that he's visiting Colombia. Santiago's father is driving, has hands on the steering wheel. Santiago reaches over and puts a hand on his father's hand and talks about how like leathery and hardworking or worn his father's hands were and how it reminds him of being a child and doing that exact same thing before the father left. When you get a smell 3/4 of the way through the book, you can go back and be like, when was this smell or even like this feeling prevalent at a different time? And I think that it's pretty expertly kind of strung together in that way.
I really just felt like it was something that was a tool to help the reader understand how the characters connect to one another and their relationships, because it never was associated with food or anything like that. It was always location. It was always the other actor in the context of the scene or chapter. I completely agree with you. I think you bring up a really great point to think about that in the concept of acting and performing an identity, which he talks about a lot. All right, Sam. So final thoughts?
I love a coming-of-age novel. I was a fan. I love gay people. I love literature. All of it kind of came together in a really satisfying way for me. And I really enjoyed my reading experience. I thought that the prose was beautiful. I thought it strung together nicely. And what about you?
I do agree the prose is very sophisticated and beautiful, and it's very visual. I thought it was a very visual novel. I think that hearing you talk about how much you appreciate a book always makes me like it more.
Aww.
So, and I also just, I love how it changes across, you know, gender identities. There's one line that I just wanted to point out. On page 216, I think that this is really core to the novel. This is about a guy who wants to be another one of Santiago's mentors. And he said that he's just another man trying to teach me to be a man. And what is a man? What is a man to all of to different people?
The world may never know.
I know, right? I don't know. And I don't wanna.
Keep it to yourself.
Women. Women.
Okay, thank you guys so much for listening. Now we're going to get into the CMU question of the week, which is, what is something new that has been integrated into your schedule this semester that you're really excited about?
So I'm going to Oakland Review on Thursdays at 5 p.m. It is the literary journal here at Carnegie Mellon, and I'm on the editorial board. Shout out Stephen Macon and Dylan Courtney, co-editors-in-chief.
Hey!
They run that shit well, and it's great. Yeah, we read submissions, talk about them. It's really great. Highly recommend if you like reading. If you like reading, yeah.
So what not really Sam? For me.
Yeah, basically the door's locked. Everyone, you can all come, but if you see Sam get like anywhere near there, like please let someone know. Please let someone know.
Guys. So this semester, I started a new position as a Dietrich ambassador. You might see a vlog that I made go up on the Dietrich YouTube channel. Super exciting. It's been fun just promoting Dietrich and the humanities. We have a soundboard now.
Yeah. God, and I just can't fuck.
Remember to follow us on Instagram at CMU Booked. And if you want to be a guest, you know, hunt us down with a bow and arrow. And you have to be skilled at it or else we're not going to let you on the podcast. All right. Thanks for listening. Bye. Thank you.